You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Tell me, do you know what day it is, Evie?
November the 4th.
Not anymore. Remember, remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder, treason, and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot. First, the overture.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Yes, we have got hands.
Make love in the hammock.
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 63 for the 5th of November, 2011. Hey, Josh, did you see what I did there?
Yeah, I did. That was good, man. I like that.
Most perfect thing I could find. It's the 5th of November. It's Guy Fawkes Day, everybody. And, of course, we had to open with V for Vendetta. I'm Dave McVeigh, and I'm joined by, of course, Josh Philpott. Josh, how's your day been?
I woke up and I did stuff and then I came here.
There you go.
by came here, I mean I'm still sitting on my bed right now with the microphone, and it's weird. It's like I'm amazed after doing this show for a while, man, how quickly I can turn anything into a studio.
You can turn anywhere into a studio, I've discovered.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've got professional mics, I've got keyboards, I've got screens, I've got power cables and mice, everything hooked up, and it takes me about 15 minutes to get it set up now.
Very cool. Our chat room, Zed, has said, Dave, have I ever thought of trying Synergy? One mouse, one keyboard, multiple network computers, controllable, and it's cross-platform. Lovely. I have no money.
Can we just bring up... Trippy Katana, or whatever the hell that name is, dude. Your name is Trip from now on.
All right, Triple
Trip has just informed us it's his birthday. So,
oh, Trip, happy birthday!
Yeah, happy birthday, dude.
Oh, Zed says it's free.
What's free?
The Synergy thing. I'll have to look into this. I will look into it. However, I may not need it so much because we will start the show by saying, first of all, that it's the official movie podcast of GeekActually.com. This week we review Roland Emmerich's new conspiracy film. Yes, that's right. Not a destruction film, not an end of the world film, but a conspiracy film called Anonymous. We also explore a little entertainment news, including new trailers for, are you ready for this, Josh? The first Red Band trailer for 21 Jump Street.
Hooray!
And Underworld Awakening. We also have a brand new list of five literary films, and we'll come back to the explanation on that a little bit later in the show. But first, we have some news, and we have to talk about this first. Film Actually is taking a hiatus from its live shows. The weekly show will continue to come out every Monday, as it has forever, but we are going to take a hiatus from live shows. For those who watch or listen to the Geek Actually show, you know we've also brought that show to an end. The reason for this is because I've started a new job, and we don't understand quite yet what the schedules are going to be. And so it's just too hard to try and schedule a live show when we don't have a set day we can do it on. Once things have all settled down and the dust is cleared and all sorts of stuff, we might be able to bring live shows back. We also plan on doing some live shows every now and again for specials, where we might say, oh, we're going to go live and we're going to talk about such and such, and we'll just do a live show here and there. So, but Film Actually is not going anywhere. Geek Actually has ended. The last show was just recorded, so you can always go over and have a listen to that as well if you want to. But Film Actually continues on and is strong. So please, be aware that it's strong. What is it, Josh? It's strong.
It's strong.
Speaking of strong, I just got to say, just on a geeky side note, we have another new podcast out called Behind the Panels, which is a comic book podcast, which had its first episode, which is a really, it's a beta episode. It's got temporary music. The structure hasn't been set properly yet. It had more hits than the Film Actually show on its first episode. So thank you very much to all those who listened. It was a phenomenon. It just hit the ground running. But it is still being developed. And if you do want to go look for that, the feed is now live on iTunes. Look for Behind the Panels, or you can, of course, find it on geekactually.com. We are looking for reviews on iTunes for that show, and we are also looking for feedback, which is at comics@geekactually.com, to help us help structure the show. Tell us what you like and what you don't like, because we're still building it. So
nice.
It's very
going to jump in and have a look at that.
Absolutely. It's very much a beta show. It's being developed as we speak it. So let's get on with this show, though. This is our film show. And for our last live show for a while, the show will continue. But for our last live show, let's have a bit of fun. And we'll start the show, as we always do, with a what we've been watching section. And I'm going to start us off, Josh, if you don't mind.
Of course.
And I'm going to start us off with this. Yes, I saw some...
James Bond, right?
I saw some footage from Mission Impossible this week. We were invited to go to the IMAX cinema and actually see about 20 minutes of footage. It was god-awful early in the morning, but we went to have a look at it. And can I tell you right now, all I'm going to say is, wow.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Tell me about it.
Absolutely wow. I'm just going to get rid of this music here and say that... they shot a portion of the film, like they've done with other films like The Dark Knight. They shot a portion of the film on IMAX cameras. And if you've seen the trailer for Mission Impossible, you'll know the sequence they showed us, which is the one in the building, where they go into the building and they're trying to get to the server room, and he has to climb up outside the building. Climb up the tall Dubai building. And that whole sequence is shot on IMAX. So we're talking floor-to-ceiling projection on that enormous IMAX screen, and man, it makes you feel the height. Let me tell you, you feel like you're going to, because the camera literally at one point goes out the window looking down at him, and you sit there and go, holy crap, my toes are tingling. No, there's a really good sequence. It's they showed us another one, which was a foot chase in a sandstorm, which is a really hard thing to shoot because, of course, there's no point of reference on anything. It's all just sandstorm. But my God, it was action-packed. So I'm really looking forward to seeing the rest of this film. All I could think when they finished the projection was, no, show us more. look, this is directed by Brad Bird, who this is his first live-action film. He's directed things like The Incredibles and Ratatouille and Iron Giant. He's a cartoon director. Had a lot to do with the early Simpsons as well. And he's making his live action debut, and it looks like he's very comfortable. He's going straight into it. For those who are worried, that J.J. Abrams did such a good job with number 3 and he stepped back, he hasn't. He's actually producing this one. So it's still a Bad Robot production. And Simon Pegg plays a much bigger role, which can only be a good thing.
Yeah, he's an interesting choice for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. He's very funny in the scene we saw as well. So he's in the one scene we saw. He's not in the foot chase, obviously. Look, it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. It's coming out in November, end of November, I believe it is. I can't wait to see it. As soon as we get some screening details to see the rest of it, I cannot wait. It was terrific. I liked it a lot. That was the highlight. We also saw, and this is for you and me, Josh, we saw Tintin.
Yes, we did.
We did. Now, we can't actually review the film yet. We've been asked not to until December, but they did say we can talk about it a little bit. And what were your first thoughts, Josh?
It's the visually the most spectacular film I think I've seen.
Absolutely.
That's as far as I'm going to go at this stage. I'll give it a proper review later, but the one thing that I can't not talk about is just how incredibly visually stunning it is.
It is. It is staggeringly beautiful. It is quite possibly some of the nicest CG ever committed to film. Realistic as hell.
Yep.
Now, as far as the film is concerned, I've already sent Paramount asked me to send them a couple of sentences, and I sent them, and I said, look, unfortunately, I thought the film was good, but it seems in all their effort to make this the most beautiful film I've seen this year, it seems to be lacking just a little bit of a heartbeat. But
Exactly. And there'll be stuff to talk about with that, but you know, it's funny because it's going to be one of those films where I'm going to say it does have more than a few things that I didn't like about it, but I think everybody should go see it just for the spectacle.
Look, the overall feeling you're left with at the end is you go, that was a fun film.
And it's interesting, man, because in a lot of ways, it's very much for me exactly. It feels exactly like the same way when I walked out of Avatar, which is that, you know, we talked about how great it was and how beautiful it was and all this sort of stuff. And everybody should have gone and seen it just like they did. But at the end of the day, it's definitely once you get past that and you're watching on a second or a third viewing, there's a lot less.
Well, yeah, you start to realize what's missing. And,
exactly.
Now I'll see Tintin again because I got to take my son to see it. And I did.
Dude, I'm seeing it at least one more time, if not two.
Yeah, and look, the 3D is very, very well done. Of course, it is. It's a CG film, and 3D always works best in CG. And I did watch it with the notion at the back of my head that I am going to see this with a 12-year-old. And all I could think all the way through this film is Nicholas is going to love this film.
Oh, dude, he will not see anything past how amazing it is.
Absolutely. So we will review that. It actually comes out Boxing Day. We will do a film actually show on that film. Mm-hmm. So keep an eye out for that. And we'll also put some reviews up on the website and stuff as we get a little bit closer. Josh, what else have you been watching this week?
What have I been watching? I sat down and watched Feast 2.
Because I haven't seen any of the Feast films.
Sorry, what?
I haven't seen any of the Feast films.
Feast 1 is an interesting little horror film. Like, it's more horror than anything else. It is a bit gross out, but it's not quite violent. It's just kind of a little bit intense to watch. It's very gory. It's very bizarre. It's pretty good. Feast 2 is a mess. Like very few films can say that. This is a gross out film, and that is all it's trying to be. Like, it is literally absolutely insane. Like, the film should be clinically put away in some sort of a vault and not shown to people because it's just bizarre. Like, it knows how fucking retarded it is, and it does some things that just surprise the crap out of you. And well, I'm not sure if I liked it or hated it.
Well, that concerns me a little bit now, though, because the Piranha 3DD is directed by the guy who made the Feast films.
Yeah, well,
because the director of the first Piranha was Alexander Aja. He's not directing the second one. The director of the Feast films is directing the second one. And that concerns me a little bit because they may not. I'm kind of a little bit concerned about Piranha 3DD to start with. But it worries me that he's just making gross out films because Piranha could easily be that.
Well, no. This is the thing, Dave. Like, number one is accomplished. Number two and three, I think, were just. He had a concept and people were watching them, so he just kept making what he wanted to, and they are very unique. You will never see another film like the Feast films. I wouldn't advise it to people. Please don't go out and buy it. But if you stumble across it, maybe watch it.
Fair enough. Okay, well, that's a high praise indeed. Don't go out and buy it.
No, it's definitely not worth money.
Oh, really? That bad? What about the first one?
The first one's worth watching.
Okay, so
yeah, actually a decent film.
Watch the first one, skip the sequels. Is that what you're saying?
I haven't seen three yet, but two did not really sell anything to me.
One can only presume, and you shouldn't always presume, but one can only presume that they are steadily going downhill.
Well, it's funny because it's this concept that it's not necessarily bad. It's just. It's not so much a film. It's like watching Jackass or something like that. Like, there's very little substance, but a lot of entertainment happening.
Right, right.
So it's bizarre. I got to watch all three, and then I'll give you guys a better understanding of what I think.
Fair enough. I've got one more film I want to mention, if that's okay. I forgot about it, and I just remembered it. I also watched. All right, let's do a little bit of background here. Everybody in our chat room, I think, would hope, because they're all geeks, hopefully everybody has seen it. Do you remember a fan film called Batman Dead End? It's the Batman fan film where Batman is chasing after the Joker, ends up in an alley, and basically the Predators and the aliens, he ends up in the middle of a fight between the Predators and the aliens. And it's extraordinarily well done. That was directed by a guy called Sandy Cholera, who also went on to direct another fan film called World's Finest, which was a mock trailer for a Superman Batman movie, which once again was fairly well done. Well, Sandy Cholera has actually directed his first feature film.
This is Hunter?
Hunter Prey is what it's called. And I had a chance to see that this week. And it's actually not bad. It's really low budget, and it does hurt itself with its budget at some stages. Like when you opening scene, you see a spaceship break apart, and it looks really fake. But once they're on the planet, it really is just two characters. And those two characters do a fairly good job. And it's basically about a guy tracking down an alien that's escaped from the ship that broke up. And they're trying to bring him back in. And it's about the head games and stuff that these two hunter and prey play. And who is actually the hunter and who is actually the prey, basically. And it's actually not a bad little film. It's short. It doesn't outstay its welcome. It's not perfect. And if he had more money, I would say that he probably actually would have even done even better with this film. But he does show a lot of potential as a filmmaker. So it'll be interesting to see where Sandy Cholera goes next.
Awesome.
But like we did last week with our little heartwarming thing, this is a man who started by making internet short films on YouTube. So
exactly.
So it really does show you that this is a kind of a new way of discovering filmmakers, that the world has changed so much. I mean, there was actually a story many years ago, an anecdote that said that Spielberg went to Universal with all of his Super 8 movies, and they basically said, no, we're not interested in any of that. Go shoot something on 35 and maybe we'll talk, right? Yeah. Nowadays, people are going out and shooting stuff with handy cams, putting it on YouTube and getting discovered.
Exactly.
So it's a world has changed, let me tell you. But yeah, no, Hunter Prey was actually okay. It's well worth having a look at. You can get it from Amazon. It's not released locally, unfortunately. I know. Bit of a pain. But it is available through import if you want to grab it. All right. You got anything else? Or shall we move on to Anonymous?
Yeah, no, I did watch I had it right there. And I watched Sharktopus. And I also watched our required film, both me and Richard did. Richard drop in his own words on it, but I did watch Battle for Los Angeles.
Battle of Los Angeles. All right, now you've finally seen it, we can talk about this.
yeah, we can.
So what the fuck was up with the samurai woman?
I don't know. I mean, like I've said it before, it's that Asylum kind of quality film, which is that they kind of do things just to try and mess with your mind, which bothers me a little. It's definitely a terrible film. My problem with it is that I just lost interest at about the quarter mark, which means that the rest of the film just becomes this bizarre kind of like, why the fuck are you still here kind of words.
Absolutely.
Constantly coming out of your mouth as you manage to kind of wade your way through what is a sea of shit that this film provides. It's funny because it's not terrible in visuals, and
it's not great in visuals either, though.
No, and that's the thing. It's like it's walking that middle line so badly that it's kind of average in every way. And it's just push so hard to try and make it bad. But again, it can never get the credit I'll give something like Life Force, because Life Force was trying to be good.
That's the difference. And that's hitting the nail on the head right there, Josh, which is one of the reasons why all the Asylum stuff drives me crazy, is because they don't even bother to try and make it good. In fact, the cheaper and nastier it is, the happier they seem to be. What I love, and where the Gloriously Wonderful Bad, and this is why something like Battle of Los Angeles will never be on the Gloriously Wonderful Bad list, and we explain that on the actual page, because for me, it's about a film where they've tried so hard to make the next Gone with the Wind masterpiece, and just failed so dismally, you know, and that's what I love. I love it when they've tried so hard.
Like people that are supposed to know what they're doing, exactly. Totally just missing something.
The bigger the names and the more money they spend, the better it gets when it fails. Let me just tell you. But yeah, you're right. Life Force is a joy to watch because you sit there going, oh my God, how did this go so wrong? Battle of Los Angeles is just trash. However, what's really interesting is that you watch two films. And the other film is also a low-budget, trashy film, but made by a master of low-budget, trashy films, which is Roger Corman. And Sharktopus, I thought, was hysterical.
Oh, God, yes. That film was fucking brilliant. It was so... It is bad. Let's be very clear about
this. Oh, it's terrible.
Film.
And it's terrible, but it's terrible with its tongue firmly planted in its cheek. And so you sit there, they're winking at you. They know it's bad and they're having fun with it. And you go along for the ride.
And you've got great cameos. You've got, what's his name? Eric Roberts, who is just a master of cheese.
And he looks like a saddlebag. Let's face it. He's had too much sun.
Oh, dude. And I have a feeling that in some of the scenes in this film, they just decided to do them with him drunk because he was just drunk. And they were like, well, we can't figure out what to do with Eric, so just let him do his thing. And then on top of that, you've got just terrible actors that need to take their shirts off and wander around randomly without any clothes on.
And then mixed into all of this, we have the wonderful Ralph Garman. And you sit there going, what the hell are you even doing in this film?
Snake is saying, well done, Dave and Josh, challenge complete. I think what you mean, Snake, is achievement unlocked. And of course, who can forget the wonderful cameo from our good friend Ralph Garman?
Yeah, absolutely.
Who was fantastic in that film because, he just didn't really have anything to do. And my favorite line from him is, damn you, Sharktopus.
Damn you, Sharktopus!
loved it.
My favorite line and scene in that entire film. If you haven't seen Sharktopus, people, go out and see Sharktopus. It's very funny. I believe it's actually been video released locally as well in Australia.
Yes, it has.
Yeah. Go and have a look at this film. There is a scene in it right near the beginning of the film when the Sharktopus is first starting to do his business, and there's a person who's cleaning the side of a boat. He's on like a window washer type seat, and the shark gets him, of course. And it's his acting is joyous. Oh, no, not this way.
Yeah.
My favorite character of the whole thing. No, we all sat and watched it together, Nikki and Katie and I. We laughed our asses off. It is a really funny film. And once again, Roger Corman knows how to take the piss out of himself. Asylum does not. And that's the problem. They're trying to be bad, but they don't understand. They don't have a sense of humor about it. So it just doesn't work.
No, they're too clinically aware of how bad that. It's like someone sat down, wrote a perfect film, and just did the opposite. You know what I mean? It's like they are aware of what they have to do to make it shit. Whereas Corman and stuff like that, it's all tongue in cheek, and movies that are bad should just be bad.
Absolutely. Like, here's a little anecdote for you. This I read about this just recently in an issue of Premiere. Apparently. Not Premiere, sorry, Empire. Apparently, Roger Corman actually turned down Sharktopus when Sci-Fi approached him with it, because he often makes films based on a title. But when he got Sharktopus, he said, this is the most stupid title of all time, and it's even too stupid for me. They had to talk him into doing it, and it turned out to be his most successful of late. So, so there's a title that's even too stupid for Roger Corman. That's got to say something right there. All right. Yes. Look, challenge completed. We did manage to get through it. I'm never watching it again. And if anybody wants to know what it's about, I couldn't tell you because I don't even understand what happened in Battle of Los Angeles, quite frankly. I sat there the entire film going, huh? What? Huh?
Yeah, that film did nothing for me.
No, it
brain
hurt.
AIDS.
It hurt.
Brain AIDS.
My wife fell asleep. So, all right, let's move on to a feature review. Let's talk about something that is on the big screen, or it's going. Yeah, it just started this week, didn't it? Yes, it's on the big screen, and you can go see this weekend if you want to. Let's talk about Anonymous.
Let's talk about it first.
And directed by Roland Emmerich and written by John Orloff, it stars Rhys Ifans, Vanessa Redgrave, David Thewlis, Sebastian Armesto, Rafe Spall, Jolie Richardson, Jamie Campbell Bauer, and Edward Hogg. Now, this is a bit of a long synopsis, guys, but this is straight from Sony Pictures. And they say, set in the political snake pit of Elizabethan England, Anonymous speculates on an issue that has for centuries intrigued academics and brilliant minds such as Mark Twain, Charles Dickens, and Sigmund Freud, namely, who actually created the body of work credited to William Shakespeare. Experts have debated, books have been written, and scholars have devoted their lives to protecting or debunking theories surrounding the authorship of the most renowned works in English literature. Anonymous poses one possible answer, focusing on a time when scandalous political intrigue, illicit romance in the royal court, and the schemes of greedy nobles lusting for power and the throne were brought to light in the most unlikely of places, the London stage. And that's straight from Sony Pictures. It's a long-winded one, but I guess they needed to explain this film a little bit. Because there are going to be people out there going, what, is that true? No, not true. It is just a speculation. It is a conspiracy theory film. I think Richard and I said it when we came out of the screening, we summed up as saying there is no difference, forget the quality of film and so forth, but in concept, there is no difference between this film and Oliver Stone's JFK. Mm. It is a speculating of a possible conspiracy. Nobody knows if it's true or not. All right, let's have a look at the trailer, and we will come back and talk about this. So here's Anonymous.
We all know William Shakespeare, the most famous author of all time, writer of 37 plays, 154 sonnets, several epic poems, and why we are here today. But what if I told you Shakespeare never wrote a single word.
None of your poems or your plays will ever carry your name.
Promise me you'll keep our secret safe.
Okay, so that's the trailer for Anonymous, which doesn't have a lot of talking in it, but it's got a lot of wonderful visuals. Josh, what did you think?
I gotta say, man, I wasn't really into this film. There are parts of it that I really love and things that really spoke to me. And my biggest issue with this film, and I'll start out by laying this straight out on the bat, is my biggest problem with this film is Roland Emmerich. Essentially, everything that is Emmerich in this film is what bothers me about this film. I felt that the film is too long. It needed to be trimmed. There's a lot of stuff there that I'm just like, I felt this story is going too long. On top of that, I found some of the plot points were just trying to expand it out. So it was this entirely huge controversy, and kind of layered so many different layers on it that the story seemed very intelligent. Whereas I was just like, I could have done this without so many characters. And then on top of that, I also had a problem with some of the characters in the film. We will come back to a few of them that I think were absolutely awesome, but there were moments in this film where I was like, I am so taken by this scene. And then the next scene, I'd be like, what's going on now? What's happening? Okay, yep, fine, whatever. It's weird because I kept jumping in and out of being into this film. There were scenes, like bits of dialogue that I just adored. Like, Rice, how do you say his name?
Who
played Earl of Oxford?
Rhys Ifans.
Rhys Ifans is amazing.
He is mesmerizing.
And you brought this up to me,
yeah.
And you were saying that he is playing a role like he's never played before, and goddamn, you are right.
Yeah.
Like, he is the greatest thing in this film. One of the sections of dialogue, he has this entire speech to his wife about writing and says that he's just like, they're like voices, they just come out. And as someone that writes, I'm just like, that is so on point that it's amazing. Mm. And I think Celine, my wonderful girlfriend, brought it up the best. She said the words that have been written in this film have been written by somebody with a real passion for what he does.
Yeah, you can actually tell that for the first time, Roland Emmerich hasn't written his own script because his writing isn't that good.
Absolutely not. And that's what I'm saying. It's like the person behind the story of this has created an amazing story, but there's just so many Emmerich-isms in this film, like things that were more him than they were the story itself.
Mm.
Like whenever he gets control of a scene, I start to lose interest. Like, there's moments of comedy that just seem to be mildly out of place, and there are moments of kind of action and things like this that just seem far too overdone. Like, it's almost like he's gone, everybody thinks all I can do is action, you know, action massive blockbuster films, well, I'll show them. And he's decided to do this film, and then while doing this film, he still fitted in moments of that, like large sections of people, you know, giant shot cameras from the top and all this sort of stuff that really kind of lose the focus of what the film was about. For me, anyway.
That's fair. Look, I actually think I liked it a little bit more than you. Funnily enough, this is a film I thought I was going to hate. And I actually looked into Richard. We saw it together at the screening. I looked at Richard and said, I like that far more than I actually thought I should have. You know what I mean? It's like I actually got involved with the characters. And part of that, you're absolutely right, Rhys Ifans is mesmerizing. And I was completely enthralled by his journey. I thought Vanessa Redgrave did a great job as Queen Elizabeth, as the elder Queen Elizabeth. And I thought it was an inspired piece of casting, actually, to cast her own daughter as the young Elizabeth. They cast Jolie Richardson to play her as a younger woman. So I thought that was really interesting. The guy who played William Shakespeare, Ralph Spall, was a buffoon. And I actually didn't enjoy him at all. And it's interesting because some of those support players who are kind of... I mean, I can understand what they're going for by making him a buffoon, but we have to ground him in a reality, in a film that is fairly grounded in reality. And when you have him, he stands out. You're right. There are parts that just stand out where you sit there and go, that just doesn't ring true at all. There is no way.
I think William Shakespeare was, for me, one of the main problems that I have with that, one of the main issues, because essentially the whole time I was feeling like he wasn't playing that era.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also thought I wasn't quite sold on, and he did a good job, but I wasn't quite sold on Sebastian Armesto as Ben Johnson.
No, me neither, man. His voice, there was something really odd about it. Like, he didn't fit the whole rest of the world. Like, his final speech between him and the Earl of Oxford is really good, but his lines of dialogue are not what sells it.
No, it's once again, it's Rhys Ifans who's selling this film. And I just wish if he just found two actors, you could have even gotten away with those scenes, you could have gotten away with those characters and everything else. You just have two actors who are at the same level as Rhys Ifans. And this film would have soared. Absolutely soared. Because it is probably the most grown-up thing Roland Emmerich's ever made. And he's obviously learning how to make a grown-up film, you know what I mean? And so I don't hold it against him that he's got some mistakes, he's got some hangovers from his Independence Day and so forth. What scares me about Roland Emmerich is just when we're starting to see a breakthrough like this, after the abysmal 2012, we just learned this week that he is actually gearing up to do Independence Day 2 and 3.
Yeah.
And so you sit there and go, one step forward, five steps back, you know? And so I'm a bit worried about it. As much as I liked Independence Day, don't get me wrong, I actually enjoyed Independence Day. It's good fun trash. But it's not a very intelligent film. It's not a very grown-up film, you know what I mean? And I was hoping that Anonymous was kind of pushing us into a new direction with Roland Emmerich. And it does in many ways, because I think it is actually a very interesting... Look, there are times in this film where I sat there and went, your theory holds water. I don't know if it's true, but it holds water. And, you know, the fact that I could actually do that with the film goes, okay, there might be something there in the script where they've done their research, they've looked through all of the history, and they've said, what could it have been? You know what I mean? I actually personally believe Shakespeare did write his own stuff, but that's my own person, because I've got this, I have this wonderful belief system in me thinking that maybe he was just a genius, and why are we looking any deeper than that? You know what I mean? Mm. But if you are going to think that there was a conspiracy there, this is one theory, and they basically put an argument forward that is reasonable. And you can look at it and go, I could buy that. If that turned out to be true, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, and I think that's credit to the film. I enjoyed the film. I enjoyed the look of the film. I thought the film was beautiful. As far as the period detail and everything, all that is beautiful. I mean, Roland Emmerich's always made pretty films.
Absolutely. His visual style has never been my issue.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's got that. And as once again, the relationships, like the relationship between not just Vanessa Redgrave and Rhys Ifans as the older Earl of Oxford and Queen Elizabeth, I actually really like the relationships between Jolie Richardson and Jamie Campbell Bower as the young Earl of Oxford. And if anybody thinks that they recognize him, if you watch the Camelot TV series, he's Arthur from the Camelot TV series. And their relationship, I also believed, and I believed his heartbreak when he was taken away from her, basically saying that he couldn't go see her anymore and all this sort of stuff. I believe Vanessa Redgrave was losing her mind, you know, by the end and being manipulated by Cecil, you know? So I believed all that. As I say, for me, the biggest problem was not the royal court. For me, the biggest problem was some of the people in the theater. And I think that's where the film is just a little bit weaker, is some of the theater folk. Some of it works really well. Some of the staging of the Shakespeare stuff is really nice. It's really well done. On the overall, I don't think it's a masterpiece, but I actually quite enjoyed it. And I actually didn't have a problem with the length.
You didn't have a problem?
No, actually, it moved along quite nicely for me.
Okay. Well, there you go. I mean, it, like I said, man, it's one of those films where it's kind of, to me, it makes sense why it's sort of sitting on kind of that 60-ish percent on most rating systems is because that's kind of how I think about it. It is about a 60% because it's like we said, the visual style is amazing. The larger-than-life nature that he can do, he can also bring into a scene that is very small as well, and I really like that. Like, he will have shots which are really beautifully, you know, decorated rooms and stuff like this, and it's like you're visually as astounded by what's in the background
as you
are the actors that are in the front. And the thing that makes this film fall apart is he hasn't picked his actors, and this is exactly an Emmerich-ism, like I was saying before. It's him because he's not that good with actors. He's always worked on a larger scale. He's always told the story through everything that's happening, and the characters are just there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the characters are his puppets, basically.
Exactly, yeah. And this is the problem with the film. He hasn't spent enough time picking the actors, and if he had, like you said, this could have been amazing.
Yeah.
What lets this film down is that when you get outside the way it looks, when you get down into the nitty-gritty of the acting and stuff like that, there are all these missteps, and because of that, yeah, just definitely 60% is what you would give. What I would give this if I gave scores.
I do want to give props to two actors. Actually, I want to give props to both the Cecils, William Cecil and Robert Cecil. David Thewlis is the elder, and Edward Hogg is the hunchback son. I thought they were both really successfully slimy.
Exactly, and he gave an amazing speech to the Earl in the three-quarter mark of the film.
Oh, yes,
just. Like, you barely notice him for most of the film, and then there's this one scene where he just drops this incredibly heavy weight on top of the Earl of Oxford, and you're all of a sudden like, and I'm back in again.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I just kept falling out of this film. It's like I'd be really into it, and then they'd throw Shakespeare on, and he was just – he felt like something out of a Nick Frost and Simon Pegg film. Like, he was too comedic for his role, and it just shone through every time he was on screen.
Which character was that? Sorry,
William Shakespeare.
Shakespeare. Look, I thought Rafe Spall was terrible. Yeah. I mean, I guess they were trying to go for that whole he's a buffoon thing, but the problem is that you have to ground that in a reality to make that.
No,
work.
No. They're trying to play the buffoon, but he's a buffoon that just seems a little bit too smart to be a buffoon.
Yeah,
and that's my problem with it. It's like, he's all laughs and all jokes, but they're all really misstep-y kind of jokes. It just didn't – nothing of his character sold for me.
Fair enough. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think he was the – him and, as I say, the other one that was actually a bit of a problem, quite frankly, was Sebastian Armesto as Ben Johnson. I just didn't quite – he didn't quite sell it for me. It could also be the fact that he's written in such a whiny way, which doesn't help. I mean, Ben Johnson mopes around most of the film. And you sit there going, just get a grip, you know? You didn't even want... What gets me is he didn't even want to do the whole publish a play under his own name by somebody else. And then when somebody else takes over, he feels all hurt by it. And you sit there going, but you didn't even want it. You know what I mean? So the character, I don't think, is particularly well written. And then I don't think Sebastian Armesto quite sold that character. As you're right. When he's on screen with Rhys Ifans just blows him off the screen, you know? And you sit there and go,
That's the problem. Like, the scenes that he's in needed to be powerful, and they misstepped.
Yeah, I agree. Overall, as a film, I'm going to say that I do recommend it to people who like a good costume drama, and it is worth seeing just for Rhys Ifans. It is worth seeing. Mm. For those who don't know who Rhys Ifans is, this is the crazy flatmate from Notting Hill. He was the crazy sex bomb DJ from The Boat That Rocked, you know, and he's always looked kind of weird, and he's been kind of wiry and all this sort of stuff, and he's turned around in this film, and he doesn't even look like the same guy. It's a complete...
I really hope he gets more roles out of this.
Well, the next role, for everybody can see him next year, he's actually Dr. Connors, a.k.a. the Lizard, in The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So that's where you'll see him next. But if you want to see Rhys Ifans doing a truly grown-up role, this is it. I mean, watching him play the Earl of Oxford, I just sat there watching going, wow, you are fantastic. You know? It's just... I could just watch the whole film of just him talking. Mm. Take everybody else out. Just let him talk because he was just wonderful. But so I'm going to recommend it to people and say that, look, it's not for those who want to go out and see something explode. It's not Roland Emmerich destroying the world. It is a character piece. It is drama. It's not perfect. But, you know, there are worse ways to spend your money.
Yeah.
You concur?
I would concur that this film would only work on a big screen. I think on a small screen I would get kind of bored. So if you're going to go see it at the cinemas. But if there's anything else that you'd rather watch, go see that.
Fair enough. That's good. All right.
There's a lot out at the moment. I don't mean that negatively. There's just a lot out.
And there's a lot coming. So So you know, there's we're spoilt for choice at the moment. So exactly. All right. So with that out of the way, let's talk a little bit about entertainment news and basically say Underworld Awakening finally got a trailer.
Yeah.
And I think we've got that right here. We can play it. Now for Underworld the Awakening, Celine is back. Not your Celine.
Not my Celine.
Kate Beckinsale has actually come back. She wasn't in the last one. So they've come back.
Wasn't it because it was set before she was born?
It was set before she was born and lots of stuff. But also, I think they did that story because she didn't want to do another one.
Fair enough.
So, and there was a lot of talk about the fact that the woman who actually took over the role or did the role, the equivalent of Celine, was basically saying she didn't want to just step in and step on Kate Beckinsale's toes and all this sort of stuff. Mm. Anyway, the point is that we're back in the modern age and Kate Beckinsale is back. Unfortunately, her husband isn't directing because Len Wiseman is directing Total Recall at the moment.
Yep.
But I think he still has his hand in it as a producer or something like that. But anyway, here's Underworld Awakening, the first trailer. Have a look at this. We'll come back and talk.
Today is a day that will change the course of the war. The epidemic that has plagued this city may soon be coming to an end. Scientists may have finally found the one that will lead us to the cure.
Everything they've told you is a lie.
Subject 2 escaped. It's somewhere in the building.
It'll kill us all.
Put it down. Now!
For 12 years, I was held captive by the humans. The world I once knew has changed. Vampires and lycans are now the hunted.
If we are to survive as a species,
we must resist the humans.
This is a new war.
Something else escaped.
It's a girl.
She's the only hybrid child who has ever existed.
The humans and lycans will hunt her down at any expense.
They're here.
Something more than twice the size of any lichen I've ever seen.
Whatever it is they want from her, it's worth dying for.
She is the key to winning this war.
We stand and we fight.
Your kind will never be as powerful as us. No matter how hard you fight, you won't win.
You don't know me very well. Day was bound to come.
My question, of course, is why did they have to put it into 3D? Why does everything have to be in 3D nowadays?
Oh, dude, because it has to be. You know that.
That looks pretty badass. So I got to say, I'm a sucker for the Underworld films. They're not always perfect, but I'm just a sucker for them.
Oh, yeah. You know what, man? Because they're better than they are worse, and every one of them has been. They are good films. They're just not perfect.
No. And do you know what they are? They're the equivalent of a pulp novel.
Yeah.
You just kind of watch them just for the fun of it. They're not good for you.
To me, I put them in the same class as the original James Bond films, like the books. It's like essentially they were just – they're trash, but they're fun trash. You know what I mean?
Zed in our chat room has just said, Kate Beckinsale in leather. Who doesn't want 3D Kate boobies? Yeah, look, to see Kate Beckinsale in her leather outfit in 3D, okay, that's worth the price of admission right there. look, I'm looking forward to it. I'll go see it. I don't know if it's going to be any good, but look, I've liked all three Underworld films. I thought the second one was actually the weakest of the three, funnily enough. A lot of people bagged out the third one. I quite like the third one.
I thought the third one was great.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought the second one actually had some pacing problems. The second one was actually a little bit slow moving in places. But I actually, Nicholas sat down and watched the first Underworld film the other day with me, and he loved it. He just thought it was awesome.
Exactly. It's superhero-esque, man. It's just it's heavy duty action.
Absolutely. So I'm looking forward to that. So I think we'll wait and see what that's like, and hopefully we'll be able to bring a review of that. We reviewed part three on this show. Part one and two came out before we started doing the show. But part three we reviewed, and I think Katrina and I reviewed it. Actually, we both liked it. We both thought it was kind of fun. Anyway, also in the news this week, James Bond finally got announced. They actually had a big press conference, an official press conference, because this has been James Bond 23. This is the one that's been in and out of production, keeps losing its budget, keeps getting its budget cut. Then they say it's all canceled, then they bring it back, and then they cancel it, and then it finally got its full announcement. And it is official. The title is Skyfall. And it is going to come out. It's done. It's a done deal now. They're going into production. I think it was something like the 6th of November or something like that. So they're literally just about to start shooting. Sam Mendes is directing this one. And we also have Daniel Craig returning. And also in the cast is Javier Bardem as the bad guy.
Yes.
Dame Judi Dench is back as M, Naomi Harris, and Bernice Marlowe are also in the film as Bond girls.
Bond girls.
And there's also been an article recently that said Albert Finney is coming on board, but we don't know what he's playing. I'm excited. Skyfall is going to start production. They actually have it here. Where is it? It says Bond 23. It will be released to 22nd of November 2012, so end of next year. And it literally goes into production. I can't find it now, but oh, here it is, November 9th.
Okay, cool.
So it's literally going into production right now. So it's all happening now. Finally, they finally got their budget under control. So I'm happy about that. The other piece of news this week, we have another trailer. 21 Jump Street has been talked about a lot lately.
What?
Well, you know, 21 Jump Street, this is the film where, what's his name?
Johnny.
Get him to the Greek boy. What's his name? His name always goes out of my head. Jonah Hill.
Yeah.
The film that Jonah Hill lost all the weight for. And he's basically playing the roles, him and the guy from G.I. Joe. His name has gone out of my head. The star of G.I. Joe.
I know the guy.
Yeah, you know the guy I'm talking about. They're basically the new Jump Street boys. They're the cops who get assigned to go back to high school and basically be cops in high school. It's a silly premise, but it looks like the film's not taking itself too seriously. And they released a Red Band trailer this week. And I thought it would be worth having a look at. Just to have a look at Jonah Hill, because he really has lost a lot of weight. It really is quite amazing. All right, so here's 21 Jump Street. See what you think of this. This is the Red Band. I'm sure there'll be an official Green Band trailer out soon, but this got put out on the internet this week. Here you go.
Not so Slim Shady. What's up? Holy shit.
I haven't seen you since high school.
Hey, Titty Twister.
Oh, fuck! You hate this, huh?
Yeah. Test results, gentlemen.
Such bullshit.
You're really good at this.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to be friends?
Fuck yeah, I do.
Get ready for a lifetime of being badass motherfuckers.
Oh, I am.
God, dude, I thought this job would have more car chases than explosions and shit.
No fucking way.
If we could take them down, we'd be off park duty for sure.
You guys even real cops who look like kids on Halloween.
Hey, you want me to beat your dick off?
You want to beat my dick off?
I think what he was trying to say was he's going to punch you so many times around the genital area that your dick's just going to fall off.
Hail the conquering heroes.
Got our first bust.
Yes! Yes!
You forgot to read him his Miranda rights. Do you even know the Miranda rights?
Look, it obviously starts with, do you have the right to remain an attorney?
Did you say you have the right to be an attorney?
You do have the right to be an attorney if you want to.
We're reviving a canceled undercover police program from the 80s. You idiots are officially transferred.
Where do we report?
Down on Jump Street. 21 Jump Street.
You are here because you some Justin Bieber, Miley Cyrus-looking motherfuckers. You will be going in as undercover high school students.
Kids are weird these days. What the fuck are those things?
You have exceptional muscle tone there, young man. When'd you go through puberty? Like at 7 or something?
There's a new synthetic drug at Sagan High. The mission is find a supplier.
I think the dealers are the popular kids.
We should throw a party. That would be the quickest way to get in with them.
Rule number one.
Let's go.
Don't give nobody no drugs, no alcohol.
Are you two throwing a party?
There's rumors in the Twitter sphere.
I promise you we'll be super professional.
All I do is party.
Take it here so I know you're cool.
Have fun.
Are you guys on drugs? I don't like that. Put your tongue back in your mouth.
A lot of things that made me wonder about you. Your taste in music. The fact that you look like a fucking 40-year-old man.
Let me check out your chest. Check out your test.
After that shit you pulled yesterday, there's no way you could be cops, right?
Will you go to prom with me?
Oh, shit. When did I get stabbed? That's awesome!
Yeah!
Why do you always jump across the car like that?
Because it looks cool.
You try.
You okay?
I think I shit my pants.
Can I just tell you that it looks terrible?
It looks like there's a few moments that I laugh, and like there's a small amount of morbid curiosity in me that actually wants to watch that. But yeah, it does look pretty shit.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. There's a couple moments that are actually amusing. I think the put your tongues back in your mouth is quite funny. And the other part I like is the fact that I love the fact that they're playing up on the fact that they look too old to be in high school.
Yeah,
which was always an issue with the original series. And so they're actually playing with that. I was never a fan of the original series, to tell you the truth. I thought it was a really stupid idea. By the way, his name is Channing Tatum, is the other star. But overall, I just think it's just not... I don't know why they're doing it. I don't know why it's a good idea.
It didn't need to happen, but then again, you know, it's the weirdest thing. It's like, though it's not something that anybody would be really... thinking that would be popular, a lot of people are talking about this.
I don't think it's anybody crazy. Asked for this film, though. That's the difference, yeah?
Yeah. I think everybody's just, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of something that you marvel at. You stare at a dissonance and kind of want to poke it and find out what it'll do. You know, it's like, there's a part of me that's just curious to see how it'd all go down, because it's just such a bad idea to bring this back.
It's like a train wreck where you just can't take your eyes off of it.
Well, I will definitely be watching it. I'll put it that way.
Absolutely. We will. We'll line up and we'll have a look at it and we'll just see if, well, we could be completely wrong. It might be the funniest film of the year. But the funny thing is, 21 Jump Street wasn't a comedy. And they've turned it into a comedy, which is another factor that kind of plays against it.
Yeah,
because they haven't been faithful to the source. They're basically saying let's fuck around with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we'll see. It's the jury is out. All right. Let's move on to our lists of five. What do you think?
Yep, absolutely.
It's funny. I left the Lorax trailer on.
Yeah, I know. And I was just supporting you on that as well. Yeah, that's why I said yeah.
Yeah, and I just kind of went, no,
I just don't care.
I don't want to do it again. I actually watched the Lorax trailer again last night. It really didn't do anything for me. I'll put the link in the show notes for those who really must go see it. I showed the trailer to my son, who is a big fan of the book, the Dr. Seuss book, and he finished the trailer with, "What the hell was that?" Yeah. So, that's not a pretty sight. So we will skip that and go straight on to our list of five. All right, list of five this week is five literary films. And what we mean by that is from beautiful costumes and flowery language to flying cars and magnificent submarines, many great films are based on amazing pieces of classic literature. Here are five of our favorite films based on or about classic literature. All right, so that's it's kind of an open slather. It'd be very interesting to see where we both go with this.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I will get us started because I usually go last, and I will go first this time. What do you reckon?
Do what you gotta.
You gotta do. All right, I'm gonna go first, and I'm gonna bring up my list if it ever loads. Come on, iPad, load up the list. Thank you. All right, my number five is a film called Scotland, PA. Directed by Billy Morissette. It came out in 2001. Now, if you haven't heard of this film, I don't blame you. It's barely been seen by anybody. It is available on import from the States. It is based on Macbeth by William Shakespeare. And it's Macbeth told, basically, Macbeth's is a hamburger shop. And it's all about the short order fry cook who basically wants to murder his boss so he can take over the restaurant.
Oh wow!
And it's got Christopher Walken as the cop Macduff.
No way!
It's brilliant. It's very dark, very black comedy, and well worth having a look at. So if you can ever see Scotland, PA, have a look at it. All right, your number five.
My number five is one that some people might have seen, some people won't have. I actually saw it at school. And fell in love with it. It's weird. Most people don't really attach themselves to films you see at school. But Of Mice and Men.
Ah, great.
With Gary Sinise and what was it? John Malkovich.
John Malkovich, yeah.
Great version. There's something about the two of them. It's very kind of, it's all about the acting.
Tell me about the rabbits, George.
Yeah. And it's funny because it even feels at times like they missed the mark a few times, but there's something about the acting quality of both of them. And it was where I first fell in love with Gary Sinise, who I wish was in more films.
Yes.
Because I actually really like that dude. I think he has, there's something about his face. He's so intense.
Well, he's actually he's on television now. That's the thing. He's doing. What is it? CSI New York or whatever.
CSI New York. Yeah. Exactly. And it's just like, you had a chance to be something great. Like, he could have been great, in my opinion, and he won't be because he just does CSI now.
Yeah, I'd like to see him return. He did a lot of films in the mid-90s, Ransom with Mel Gibson, Apollo 13, so forth, and he was fantastic. He always raised the films to a different level.
And he was one of those actors that may not have been the best actor of the time, but he was one of those guys you always watched.
Hmm.
And I wanted to see him get that role, the role that takes him into that hemisphere with all the greats.
Right.
And instead he went to CSI.
Yeah, that's a shame. Yeah. How do you pronounce his name? Because I always thought it was Sinise.
Oh, maybe it is.
I don't know. We could be wrong. Both of us could be wrong. I don't know. Sorry, Gary, whatever your last name is.
Just Gary.
Gary will do. I feel like I know the man. All right. So my number four is Much Ado About Nothing, Kenneth Branagh's film from 1993, based on Shakespeare's play, of course. This was an eye-opener. It was this fun, rollicking comedy. Even though it's all in Shakespearean prose, you knew exactly what was going on. It brought Shakespeare to the mass market, and it was just a fantastically fun film with a great cast, with the exception of Keanu Reeves. but luckily, everybody else kind of shone past him, so it was all right. But it's a really fun film. And if you haven't seen it and you go, oh, I don't like Shakespeare, give this a shot. We saw this with people who said they didn't like Shakespeare and they absolutely loved the film. So, because it's fun and it's really funny in places. Callison wants to point out in the chat room that Passion of the Christ was based on a book, right?
It was based on a book.
It's not coming back up on the lists again. Well, I hope not. All right, your number four.
My number four is, and judge me if you will, Oliver Twist.
I won't judge you at all.
Any incarnation of it, I'll take it.
Fair enough. Which incarnation is your favorite?
I don't know. There was one around the 80s, I think, or just before that, which I watched again at a young age as a kid, which I probably remember the best. But some of the earliest ones, like the, you know, early ones.
There's
like
the classic piece, can I have some more? The one they always show clips from is fantastic. Didn't Polanski recently direct a version of Oliver Twist?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, I haven't seen
it. And that. I watched it, and it was all right.
It was all right. Okay, fair enough.
I just have this thing. It's the story itself.
Yeah, well, no, it's a great story.
I just don't care which version of it is. I've watched every one that's ever slid across my table.
Fantastic. All right, my number three is probably my favorite book of all time. It's the 1960 book Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. And when they made the film in 1962, Robert Mulligan directed the film. It is also one of my favorite films of all time. Harper Lee's book, this is actually the most recent book in my entire collection, but it is considered a masterpiece of literature. And she only wrote one. She only wrote one book, and this was it. And what a book it was. And we read it. We had to read it in advanced literature in high school, and I read it in a day. It is so good. Mm. And the film is fantastic. Gregory Peck has never been finer. So well worth having a look at. Your number three.
My number three is A Clockwork Orange.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you see, I got given the book much after I'd seen the film, but both of which are just... I don't know. There's something about the whole experience of it. It's the language they speak. It's the way that it's shot and directed as a film.
Yep.
It's just that style.
Yep. Yep.
The bar that they inhabit in, the costumes, the clothing, everything about this film.
Yeah, no, I agree. A Clockwork Orange is an amazing film, which is one of those films that I didn't like the first time I saw it, but it has definitely grown on me over the years. And it stands as one of those great masterpieces of cinema. So Kubrick at his finest. And the book, I have never actually been able to get through the book because I have trouble with the language. But everybody I know who's read the book think the book is brilliant. So I have trouble with it. I have trouble getting into it. It's I've tried several times. But that's one of the challenges of the book is the language.
Yeah.
My number two is the Anthony Asquith 1952 film based on Oscar Wilde's The Importance Being Earnest, which is still, quite frankly, to this day, one of the funniest plays ever written. And that particular version of the film is one of the funniest films ever made. It is a very, very funny film about manners, as only Oscar Wilde could write. The book was written in 1898. It's really amazing to think going back that far. But it's a fantastic film. And there was a recent version made with Reese Witherspoon, which is fun, but nowhere near in the league of the original black and white one. So go back and have a look at that film. Really, really funny stuff. Your number two.
My number two is Faust, and a particular Faust, 1926.
Oh, yeah.
The very early one. Now, I watched this as a kid, and it scared the shit out of me. And don't ask me why. I think it's just how dramatic it is.
Yep.
I think that the way that it's shot, and everybody just looks so creepy. Like, everyone that's in this film is not particularly friendly looking. And even though the devil, when I look back at him, is this, like, mildly pudgy dude with, like, horns on him looking something like he should have horse legs on or something like that. Like, he just looks like one of those old school theater actors. There was something about it at the time. It's the concept. I mean, I've loved the story of it. And again, it's that horror person in me probably that likes, you know, just anything that is like dealing with the devil and stuff like that. But yeah, it's just fantastic.
Yeah, no, Faust is a classic story, and it's actually been reworked and manipulated so many times.
Dude, I just went to find out which version it was because I had to find pictures of it. I went through, and I think there is one about every 3 years.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. Yes, no, I am actually really – I really like the story of Faust. I really like I still – to this day, I actually still wait for a really, really top-notch version with modern – filmmaking techniques.
Oh, modern. Yeah, because I was about to say 1926.
No. The classic is great. I mean, because the story rides on itself. But wouldn't you like to see that done with modern effects work and just...
Oh, dude. All the time.
Brilliantly put together. I think one of the most recent Fausts I saw was like a bad 80s horror film, which didn't work very well. But anyway. All right. My number one, with threat of possibly vaulting this, because we've actually brought it up a few times. But it has to be the 1981 film Excalibur by John Borman, based on Sir Thomas Malory's La Morte d'Arthur, written in 1485.
Wow. I think you win the earliest film out of our literature section.
Now, this is, for me, probably the definitive telling of the King Arthur legend. La Morte d'Arthur is a book that is really hard going, and if you can get through it, I applaud you. I've gotten most of the way through it. I haven't quite finished it, but it is hours and hours and hours of reading, and it's all written in ye olde English. So it's very hard to get through. But the film is brilliant, and you've seen Excalibur, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just a stylish, fantastic early 80s film where they put together a really bloody, sexy version of King Arthur, all based on the text of Mallory. And it's just fantastic. It was a really good film. Loved it a lot. Your number one, Josh.
My number one, don't judge me.
Never judge.
I love the book. I've always loved the book. And the most recent film has actually been my favorite telling of it, which is The Count of Monte Cristo.
Oh, good stuff, yeah.
It's just, there's something about the adventure of it. There's something about the character, that just sits with me. It's like, it's someone that's not stupid. It's just he needed some guidance to figure out how to be a better person and stuff like this. And it's just such an amazing story that I love going back to it. And I thought the whole Guy Pearce and film recently was just probably my the best telling I've seen.
Oh, okay. Yeah, fair enough.
It was just interesting and intriguing, and I thought the acting level was a lot more decent than I thought it was going
to
be.
I actually haven't seen the Guy Pearce version. I must get around to watching it. I know the story well, but I haven't seen that version.
No, you should see it, dude. It's really good.
I have a couple of honorary mentions I want to throw in here. The only reason they didn't get on the list is because I already had two Shakespeares. I had the Scotland PA and the Much Ado About Nothing. But there are three other Shakespeare film versions that really do need to be mentioned. These aren't on the list, of course, because I think Much Ado About Nothing is the one you really want to see. But we should mention Polanski's version of Macbeth, which is a phenomenal film. And Zeffirelli has directed two different Shakespeare films. Well, he actually directed three, but the two in particular I want to mention are his version of Romeo and Juliet from 1968 and Hamlet from 1990 with Mel Gibson. These are really good tellings of Shakespeare, and these are well worth having a look at as films. So Callison says no Dune. No, because the film actually sucked.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I mean, look, I own it and I watched it many times, but let's get real here. The film is not a good film. So I just thought I'd throw those out there just as other films that you can go catch up on as far as Shakespeare is concerned, because they are very good tellings. As far as Romeo and Juliet is concerned, that 68 version is considered the definitive telling of Romeo and Juliet. So that brings us to feedback, Josh.
Yes.
And we have feedback from Zed. In fact, we have two feedbacks from Zed. We will start with the first one, which was basically just saying, just a quick email. I'm going to write a proper feedback tonight. Sorry about this. And he just put down some links. And I just thought I'd throw these links, the names of these links at you, and just tell me what you think of these, okay? First of all, he just writes, strippers versus werewolves. And all I can say to that is, right on, bring it on. He sent the IMDb link for the film. It looks like there is, quite frankly, a film about strippers versus werewolves. He also wanted us to point out to have a look at the IMDb entry for The Muppets. He says the list of stars is crazy. And it's true. We have actually talked about this on the show before, how many different stars there are in this. It's like any Muppet film. There's always a lot of stars. Anyway, let's move on to his proper email. And his proper email says, and I just wanted to read this. It's a little bit long, but I just want to read this. It says, hey, Dave, published freelance journalist Josh, Richard, Celine, Dave K, Miran, Katrina, Jacob, Nick the Little Geek, Natalie, Callum, Susan, Pablo, Brandon, Nathan, Shane, Denny, and all the other hosts, no AR drones included. So if you didn't notice, I went back and listened to Geek Actually After Show episode 100. Do you know how much it hurts to fall off a treadmill? I may have to stop listening to you guys. It's too unhealthy. And oh my God. And oh my God, you guys lost it listening to yourselves losing it. Blue screen vajayjay is all he wants to say there. It's pretty funny stuff. I also went back to Shyamalan, Film Actually 100, and I've noticed that I really love it when you rip on a movie. In that vein, I will buy you the Blu-ray of The Zookeeper, provided that Celine, Mirren, and Dave K are involved. if you thought Wolverine or Sucker Punch were bad, The Zookeeper makes them look good.
We may have to at least take him up on the concept of getting these people involved.
We might. We'll look into this for the future. Our rest of this year is pretty booked up, but we might do this as a special at some point because it could be fun.
It's not out until next year, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's only just finished its cinema run, so it'll be a while. So we might look at that early in the new year. Why am I talking about the old episodes? Because your latest episode have been so awesome. I have found
I thought we were going to get a talking to just then.
So did I when I first read this. It says, I have found no nits to pick. You're doing an awesome job. And he says, quick review for In Time. Because if you remember last week, I said, did anybody see it? Nobody had seen it. He said, quick review for In Time, meh. The longer of you, meh, it was okay. Just doesn't grab you. 8 for plot, 5 for overall, 8 for the actors. No idea what went wrong. And he says, I hope to be in the show for a bit. Thank you very much. Jordan, a.k.a. Zed. Zed, you're welcome. And I'm really, really sorry that he's gone back and started listening to all these Geek Actuaries and we've just canceled Geek Actuaries. It's kind of sad. But we're still here. Film Actuary will continue on for as long as we can do it. For those who may have missed Geek Actuaries, just to remind you, Geek Actuaries has finished. This show will not be live as of next week for a while until we figure out what's going on. But the show will still come out weekly. Find it on geekactuary.com or on iTunes. Josh! We're a little bit early. This is a little bit of a short show, but we're done. Unless you've got something to add here.
No, it's okay.
It's actually quite refreshing to have a short show for once. We sit there and go, do you know what it is? It's because we're scheduled for having Richard here. And if Richard had been here with the extra opinions and the extra list of five, it would have pushed us another 20 minutes.
So he's the reason we keep going over.
Absolutely. It's all Richard's fault. Not at all. Richard, come back to us. But there you go. That's the show. Next week, we'll be reviewing what? Do we have any idea what's that next week? Oh, next week's The Immortals.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. So next week we'll be reviewing The Immortals. Keep your eye on Geek Actually this week. We'll also be talking about The Burning Man later in the week, in next week's show as well, as of what you've been watching. But during this week, I'll be putting out an interview with the director on the site. So keep your eyes open for that. The director, Jonathan Teplitsky, and the actress, Bojana Novakovic, I think that's how you say it, were gracious enough to sit down with me and we had a little chat. So we'll have that video interview up during the week on the site. Awesome. Yeah, that's pretty good. It was a good interview. It was good fun. So that's that. That's that. We should throw out a few plugs here, I guess. Plugs are always good. We should say that Charlie and Brad are running reboundradio.com, and they've got a few good shows out there, Good Day Sir, Movie Matchup, etc. Go check them out. You can find their shows on iTunes or at reboundradio.com. And, of course, our buds, our good friends, the Real Junkies, over at weekendronin.com, or you can also search for their show on iTunes, R-E-E-L, and they put out a whole bunch of episodes this week, so they're catching up with a vengeance. And Richard's not here, but let's give him a plug anyway. Our usual...
Yeah, Richard from that site called Real Bits with a Z.
Yeah, the Real Bits with a Z, no the. Okay. No, the Real Bits with an S. .com is the home of Richard Gray, and you can also find him on Twitter just by searching for DVD Bits or The Real Bits. And Josh, where can people find more of you?
Well, rawdlc.com is a gaming website. You should head over there and check it out. There's a whole bunch of stuff up there. If you're into hip-hop and you want to check it out, hiphopnetonline.com is where we post up just a few words just to keep you up to date with all the stuff that's happening in hip-hop around the world.
Fantastic. I also should throw out a quick plug here for my son because I'm kind of involved in it, and it's a lot of fun. If you go over to his YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/NickyMcVeigh, we've started a little series. We've got two up so far. We've started a little series of Lego animated films. They're really, really short. They're called Trailer Blips, and basically we're parodying popular trailers.
Awesome.
But literally within like 20, 30 seconds. In Lego animated films. They're very funny. So you can go up and have a look. He's already got one for Dark Knight Rises and The Burning Man. And there's more coming. So go shoot over there and have a look. They're quite fun. We might even embed those over on Geek actually sometime this week as well. Okay, as I said before, the opening clip for this episode was from V for Vendetta because it's Guy Fawkes Day and it seemed very appropriate. We're going to close the show with the Mission Impossible theme because I haven't got the anonymous soundtrack yet, but we also saw that clip from Mission Impossible. Made me all Mission Impossible jazzed this week. I just want to go watch all the films again now. Nice. So we're going to finish. But this, there's been lots of different versions of Mission Impossible. So what version is this? This is the Michael Giacchino version that was in Mission Impossible 3, which is a really good version of this. So we'll play this to run ourselves out of this show. Josh, you got anything else? If not,
I'm done, man.
In that case, I'll say goodbye to you.
Let's call this a show.
This is a show. Oh, you know what we did forget? We plugged everyone else. We didn't plug ourselves. Get merchandise. Join the fam.
Some show that we do with people on it.
Yeah, that's right. Agree or disagree with anything we had to say here. Want to suggest a movie to us? Do any of that sort of stuff. Feedback at filmactually.com is our email address. Voicemail us at 02801131167. And if you're succinct and to the point, we'll play you on the show. And get merchandise, join our fan page, follow us on Twitter and all that other stuff just by going to geekactually.com and click the follow us link on the side of the page. That's it. There you go. Now I've got all that out of the way. All right. And make sure I've got this in the right place. Okay, so we're going out with the soundtrack for Mission Impossible 3. I'm going to say go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you next week, Josh.
All right, man. Later.
Bye, everybody.